This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this U.S. politics edition of the program. A grand jury has indicted a former president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Hello again. I'm Carol Castillo. It is widely known that many other democracies have held former leaders accountable for crimes. France indicted two former presidents for corruption after their tenure. Italy, South Korea, and Argentina have held former leaders accountable. And current Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing three corruption cases. However, Trump, who was impeached twice by the U.S. House of Representatives but never convicted in the Senate, is the first former U.S. president to face criminal charges. On Tuesday, April 4, former President Donald Trump appeared in a New York State courtroom and pled not guilty to a 34-count felony indictment, accusing him of conspiring to illegally influence the 2016 election through hush money payments to an adult film actress designed to suppress claims that could harm his electoral prospects. Shortly after the arraignment, Trump boarded a plane to his estate in Mar-a-Lago, Florida. At a rally that evening, he lashed out at the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, for bringing criminal charges against him.
And I never thought anything like this could happen in America. Never thought it could happen. The only crime that I have committed is to fearlessly defend our nation from those who seek to destroy it.
However, DA Alvin Bragg begs to differ with Mr. Trump, even though some critics have characterized the so-called hush money case as the weakest among the pending investigations against Trump, even calling it tawdry and trivial. Bragg's office characterizes the payments as an unlawful plan to identify and suppress negative information that could have undermined Trump's campaign for president. Here is how Alvin Bragg summed up the charges.
Donald Trump was arraigned on a New York Supreme Court indictment, returned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. Under New York state law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and an intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about.
To put a finer point on the indictment and how it relates directly to the larger issue of alleged interference in the 2016 election, Mr. Bragg accuses Trump and his associates of engaging in a catch-and-kill scheme.
Why did Donald Trump repeatedly make these false statements? The evidence will show that he did so to cover up crimes relating to the 2016 election. Donald Trump, executives at the publishing company American Media Incorporated, Mr. Cohen, and others agreed in 2015 to a catch-and-kill scheme. That is, a scheme to buy and suppress negative information to help Mr. Trump's chance of winning the election.
As VOA News analyst Ken Bredemeyer reports, former President Trump is facing several other criminal investigations, including federal probes of his efforts to upend his 2020 re-election loss to Biden, his role in encouraging supporters to try to block Congress from certifying Biden's victory on January 6, 2021, and his retention of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. In addition, a prosecutor in the state of Georgia is investigating Trump's efforts to reverse Biden's win there when Trump asked state election officials to, quote, find him enough votes to claim victory. For more on this historic development that will undoubtedly shake up the 2024 presidential race, we turn to our veteran political analyst. John Fortier is political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler. He is executive vice president for policy at Third Way, and that's a center-left group here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome back to the program. Well, John Fortier, let me get your top line takeaways from the arraignment of Donald J. Trump on Tuesday and the implications of this historic development.
Well, we knew this was coming. In fact, I think talked about it on our last show, but it was striking to see the president have to go up to court in New York. I think the question really is here what the end game is. And ultimately, Donald Trump does face this suit, which according to the court schedule is going to drag on, really will not be getting going in court until December and into next year when the campaign is in full swing, and others that you've mentioned, potentially in Georgia, potential federal charges, as well as some civil suits. So Donald Trump can be facing a fair amount of legal trouble. I do think it's a very difficult proposition to think about not just a former president, but you know, a very likely and stated candidate for the president of the United States being investigated by various legal entities, most of which have some political spin to them, elected officials, elected prosecutors, or people appointed by his potential opponent. And this case, I do think, is the weakest. And frankly, I'm struck by the legal analysis across the aisle, not universally, but certainly many people not supporters of Donald Trump think the legal case here is not so strong. It's not that he didn't do some things we might not like, but connecting them and making them a felony and getting within the statute of limitations, which the prosecutor has gone through lots of hoops to do, I think there's a lot of question of whether this is really a likely case they're going to win or the one that maybe shouldn't have been brought. I think the immediate implication for this is there is a unified support for Donald Trump, at least on this issue, on the Republican side, that he is under siege from the other side, that this is a political prosecutor, that there's probably more to come, that they have been out to get him from the beginning. And I think within the Republican Party and as a candidate for president in the primaries, this has helped him. Now, maybe this is a short-term effect. We don't know if in a month things will go back to normal, but the dynamic before this was that there at least looked like a strong alternative to Donald Trump in the Republican primary. Governor Ron DeSantis, at least for the moment, this strengthens Trump and makes DeSantis's position a bit difficult, not wanting to criticize the president when most Republicans think, at least in this case, he's being unfairly attacked. So I think that's the immediate political outcome. But I also think we have to think about, could this really continue? There probably does need to be some thinking about what we do about a political candidate for office with all of these suits. And I would not be surprised to see other courts step in and at least limit the types of things that are going to go forward in the midst of a campaign if Donald Trump is the nominee.
Well, turning to you, Jim Kessler, what John Fortier just said prompts me to say those who characterize this probe and others as some sort of political prosecution, one could also say, well, no one is above the law. So let me get your take, because as we said many times, it seems the weaker case among the many that Trump is facing. It's a rather, some say, trivial. It's a tawdry story of paying hush money to a porn star, an adult film actress. And yet it does suggest, as Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg said, election interference, the suppressing of damaging information that could have affected Trump's fate in 2016 and maybe even doomed his chances against Clinton. So again, on the substance and the politics, what are your thoughts?
It can be both no one is above the law and that the prosecution feels political. Like both of those things can be true simultaneously. Donald Trump probably isn't the first president of the United States who has cheated on his wife and paid hush money to cover it up. That has probably happened before in America. Some of the other things that Trump is going to be indicted for are going to be unique to him. But this case, which the legal experts do say it is the weakest of the four cases that are likely to be brought up against Trump, is also the most easy to understand and the hardest to resist because it involves more than one adult film star. It involves hush money and payouts and sex and also suppressing stories through the National Enquirer, which is another media attraction. But, you know, Washington is a city that's a who's up and who's down city. So what you try and do in these situations is to see, okay, well, who's winning in this and who's losing? I think if you look at the intramural contest within the Republican Party and the 2024 presidential nomination, I think Trump is unmistakably a winner here. Like, his opponents don't know how to handle this and are soft pedaling their responses, which in my view is a huge mistake if you are trying to take him down. And no one is talking about any of the other candidates. Once again, Donald Trump has taken all the oxygen out of the room. He was already the likely nominee. It makes him the more likely nominee. But the other winner on this is Joe Biden, because if you look at public opinion polls on this indictment, 60% of independents believe that, you know, this criminal case against Donald Trump is legitimate and he deserves to be prosecuted on it. Well, that's a very, very high number. He won independent voters in 2016, and he's going to need to do so again. It's Republican voters, hardcore Republican voters, who say that this is unfair and who feel that he is a victim on this. So he's up in the primary and probably down in the general because of this.
So, John Fortier, once again, we're back to politics. There's a lot of substance. There's a number of cases, and we'll be getting into those in a minute, particularly the January 6th case, Special Prosecutor Jack Smith. We just learned that former Vice President Mike Pence is not going to appeal a judge's order compelling him to testify in the Justice Department's investigation into efforts by former President Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Former Vice President Pence has a very important role in that. He actually stood firm. He didn't waver with respect to counting of electoral votes. But the politics, as Jim Kessler mentioned, as you said as well, Trump is looking very good. This particular case seems to be strengthening him. His Republican rivals, Ron DeSantis, other contenders, even former Vice President Mike Pence, they're all in for him. But what are the ramifications of that? Are we going to go back to Trump being really the inevitable Republican nominee? And as Jim said, this could redound to Democrats' benefit in a general election.
Well, I do think there is a rallying around Donald Trump phenomenon. And I don't think it's just hardcore Trump supporters. Of course, there are some Republicans who were never Trumpers, would never support Trump. But, you know, I think it's a stronger phenomenon than that. It's a lot of the people who might have voted for Donald Trump, but are looking for some alternatives. And, you know, maybe they still don't love Donald Trump. But on this issue, they definitely feel like there's an injustice being brought from the other side. In many ways, it reminds of the closing of the ranks around Bill Clinton back in the days where his cabinet, his party, came with him, and the details weren't great for him, and it looked like politically it wouldn't be great, and ultimately he was in a very good position. I don't know that it helps him across the aisle, although I do think, quibbling with Jim a little bit, that, you know, a lot of the polls show that many people, in independents included, think this is a political prosecution. So they may think maybe it should go forward, but they also think it's political. And so at the end of the day, if you think Donald Trump is a weaker general election candidate against Joe Biden, there's a greater chance that he's going to be the nominee. So in that case, I think it could help Joe Biden. And I do think the real dynamic that could be that Donald Trump loses would be support coalescing around Governor Ron DeSantis. And I don't think that's impossible, but I think it's frozen in place right now, and that there's not much he can say or do, and he's not in the race yet. Whether this blows over a bit or calms down and we go back to a normal dynamic, I don't know. But I do think it generally helps the president. The one thing I will point out is, what about all these other cases? People think, oh, it's much worse for Donald Trump. I don't think it's really tenable to think that there will be case after case and Donald Trump being in court time after time as he's a major candidate for president. And that just won't sit well in whatever way you think. And I think there are many people on the left who think that he should essentially be taken off the field here and not be a candidate, and that he's going to go to jail. And ultimately, we have an election. And if he's going to be the nominee, preferable for the American system and for everyone to let's have the people hear this out. And again, the second, third case, even if you think they're more serious than this one, ultimately, I think it's going to get caught up to a kind of circus. Well, it's just another case. It's another thing being done. And I think that's an unpredictable dynamic going forward, one I don't look forward to, but I worry is going to happen. And I hope that there is some limiting principle as to, if he's going to be the nominee, then let him be the nominee and not have it be somewhat questionable whether he's going to be under indictment as the campaign goes on.
Well, as we've said at these microphones, Jim Kessler, he's under indictment. That doesn't prevent him from running. And as you both have said, it may be strengthening him in the short run. On the other hand, it looks like some other Republicans, leaving aside House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell, minority leader Mitch McConnell, has pretty much remained silent as Trump pleaded guilty to the 34 felony counts. Many Republicans like him, they have blamed Trump for the loss of the Senate majority and disappointing performance of Senate Republicans last year. And they've expressed doubts about Trump's ability to win the general election in 2024. Talk about some of that, as well as Democrats' reaction.
Yeah, Carol, both parties suffer from some delusions on this. The delusion on the Democratic side is that, to use John Fortier's term, Trump can be taken off the field in 2024 because of these legal cases. That is very unlikely to happen. The delusion on the Republican side is that if we treat Trump politely, there'll be a coalescing behind somebody else like Ron DeSantis, and we can finally end this nightmare. Well, that's not going to happen either. What Republicans need to do is they have to realize they've been handed a gift. Whether this prosecution by the Manhattan District Attorney may seem overly political or not, they've been handed a gift and they have to use it. And there is no doubt, none whatsoever, that Donald Trump committed a crime. Paying hush money to somebody is a crime. Falsifying those records is a crime. So they should be saying that. And the Republican that is, I believe, the most delusional on this is Mike Pence, because where he's in dream world is his belief that he could possibly be the Republican nominee. That's never going to happen. So some prominent Republicans need to go much further than the silence of Mitch McConnell, and it's probably someone like Mike Pence who was there, and to say Donald Trump committed crimes. He committed multiple crimes, not just on this. He is unfit to be president, and I'm going to say that over and over and over again, even if it doesn't benefit me politically. Dealing with Donald Trump like he is a normal candidate. If he was a normal candidate, these allegations would have ended his career 6 years ago. He's not. And Republicans, I just think, have to step up there or they face him controlling the party again. And most mainstream and traditional Republicans don't want to see that happen.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's executive vice president for policy at Third Way. We are discussing the implications and politics of the indictment of former President Donald J. Trump. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at @Carol_Castiel or connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Well, here's a shout out to one of our most loyal listeners and Facebook fans, Chidi Goodness from Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let me pick up on former Vice President Mike Pence that Jim Kessler was referencing. Let's move on briefly because we have news this week that Vice President Pence will not appeal a judge's order to compel him to testify in the Justice Department's investigation into efforts by Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Talk about the implications of that particular development, if you will.
Well, it's an interesting development. I'm not sure it's hugely significant in the sense that we see the public decision, but there's lots of negotiation behind the scenes as to what the scope of testimony is. And in fact, the judge's ruling and the argument for it is that in some areas, his testimony is off limits, and some ways he might answer some questions. So again, I don't know how essential he will be to the case that potentially the Justice Department will bring. Some of what he has said in other fora or is publicly known may be sufficient for that. So I agree with Jim about the politics of this, that Mike Pence, and I would say it's through no fault of his own, really is not in a position to be the Republican nominee and is not going to have much support. I also don't think that a more forward criticism of Donald Trump from him is really going to have much of an audience in the Republican primary and is going to do much damage to Donald Trump. So again, I think it's part of the puzzle and there are a lot of pieces here. And yes, he was an important player, but the extra information that we learned from Mike Pence for this somewhat limited questioning, I'm not sure is going to be the thing that tips the balance in one direction or the other as to how this case goes.
How about you, Jim Kessler? What are your thoughts regarding the fact that former Vice President Pence will be now the highest profile witness to answer questions before a grand jury connected to Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election? This is this very serious federal investigation into the January 6, 2021 assault on the Capitol.
And this is the most serious case that's out there against Donald Trump, and the one where I think what Mike Pence could say could be very damaging. And the question is, does he do that? And, you know, thus far, Mike Pence has kind of been like a potted plant when he was in the vice presidency and in his post-vice president role. And look, I believe that Mike Pence is a person of principle. And, you know, this is an opportunity for him to step out of his comfort zone and to really, you know, say the truth and to say it loudly and to say it over and over again. Carol, there's a dynamic in elections when there's a multi-candidate field, which is what we're going to see in the Republican primary, which is when there's a front runner, you need to attack that front runner. But the person who does the attacking usually suffers as well. And somebody who is away from that fray does better. One of the candidates running for the Republican nomination has to take that role of being the attack dog on Donald Trump. Mike Pence is actually the logical person to do it. And it's not going to help him win the nomination. But let's face it, his chances of winning the nomination are asymptotic to zero right now. And that's what he needs to see his role to be, both in a legal context and a political context.
We will certainly continue this conversation, but there's another very important development this week, political development that has not just statewide implications, John Fortier, but nationwide implications, say analysts, and that is the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin, a very important battleground state, more important than ever, certainly with respect to 2024. The liberal candidate won that election. So Democrat Janet Protasiewicz won this election. This has implications for abortion rights, for what we call gerrymandering, you know, the drawing of maps in order to determine how many members of Congress and which party, et cetera. Talk about what's at stake and what are the implications of this statewide election, not just for Wisconsin, but for the nation.
Wisconsin, in many ways, is one of our closest swing states. Donald Trump won it in 2016 and lost it in 2020 by very narrow margins. It's also a very polarized state, with the left and the right being pretty far away from each other, even though it's pretty close. And you would have expected in a race of this consequence that the race would at least be close. And this was not a close race. This was a race that Democrats won significantly. And I think the issue that everybody's focusing on is abortion. I think that's partially right. That was a very large factor. I will say the worry for Republicans is, I think, a slightly broader mix of things that we saw in the 2022 election. Counteracting what should have been their good year was Democrats' ability to really rev up their base. And I think it's a combination sometimes of the uncertainty of abortion laws in states and the sense of Donald Trump and candidates that seem too far right, and even some January 6th kind of worries about the election integrity of our system that, you know, you might have thought would not overcome typical midterm effects, president of the White House not being so popular, but they have. There's no doubt that there was a coalescing of kind of a more liberal, progressive base that is just unhappy about certain things, with abortion being the number one that they were worried about in this case with their Supreme Court. And if Republicans are worried about other things, that maybe not everywhere, but again, enough to be problematic in various places in the coming election. And I think that's something that they're just having a hard time wrapping their heads around right now.
And Jim Kessler, this might be a cause for celebration among Democrats, because Protasiewicz's election to the state Supreme Court is going to flip the court from a conservative to a liberal majority the first time in 15 years. It has implications for abortion rights. The conservative Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, denying women a right nationwide to access to abortion. So there's that issue. There's the voting rights. Talk about the implications of this election.
This 2023 Wisconsin election felt like the undercard for a 2024 heavyweight presidential election. And what we're seeing is, both in this race in Wisconsin, we saw it some in 2022, the battle of mainstream versus extreme. And Democrats recently have been able to more often win that battle over the mainstream label, while Republicans have had to carry the extreme label. And sometimes that extreme label has to do with things like support for Donald Trump or the conspiracy theories about the election. But the one that is most damaging and that we saw in Wisconsin is abortion. And the 2024 presidential election will be the first one in really 50 years in which the president's position on abortion could have real national ramifications about whether the right to choose will go from being a constitutional right to a criminal act. And what you saw in some counties that were reliably Republican in Wisconsin, Republicans still won those counties, but by smaller margins. And I think we're seeing, once again, the revenge of suburban women here. This is something Republicans need to worry about for 2024.
Revenge of suburban women. Jim just has a way with words. I think that's about all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Thanks for a lively conversation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.